Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Welcome your hosts, Byron White and Amanda Smith.
Hey everybody, we're on this week. It's myself and Byron, and we're going to be talking to a really great business guest who is going to give us some great pointers on how to take your business to the next level. It's going to be all about enabling entrepreneurs to grow their businesses through the power of effective speaking and presenting. So we're going to go to a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Chris Witt.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Are your domains locked to the max? If not, your online brand presence and your entire online business could be at risk from internet thieves. Imagine the damage that you and your company would suffer if control of your domain was lost. Protect all of your valuable domains with MaxLock from Moniker, your domain asset management specialist. With MaxLock, even if your email accounts are hacked and your passwords are stolen, your domains are protected in your Moniker account. Transfer your domains to Moniker today, powered by MaxLock, delivering maximum protection for your domains. Find out more at moniker.com/MaxLock.
Friend Finder, the world's largest online dating network, featuring over 100 million profiles at hot sites such as Passion.com and FastCupid.com, represents enormous profit-making opportunities for webmasters just like you. With Friend Finder's ability to geo-target and provide billing solutions in most languages and currencies, you are sure to find our comprehensive network to be a good friend to your wallet. Get more traffic-maximizing details now at FriendFinder.com.
Looking for a new way to build backlinks and traffic back to your website? Then look no further than the quickest and easiest way to blast your article to over 30,000 subscribers at the click of a mouse. Introducing ArticleSender.com, the world's premier article distribution service. With ArticleSender.com, you can submit your prize-winning piece to thousands of promising publishers and article directories craving for fresh content. ArticleSender.com also provides premium services so that your article is SEO ready. Plus, we provide express editorial review for rush delivery of your submissions within 24 to 48 hours. Article distribution at its easiest. One form, one click, thousands of results. Get your free account today at ArticleSender.com. That's ArticleSender.com.
Go behind the scenes of Life Tips with their Facebook fan page. Search for Life Tips Podcast on Facebook now.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Amanda, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
I think we're having some technical difficulty, but we'll let George suss that out. It's what we're hearing in the background is a little bit faint. But most importantly, let's see if Chris Witt is on the line again, if he can hear us.
I'm on the line and can hear you loud and clear.
Well, if nothing else, the three of us will enjoy a wonderful conversation and hope our listeners are going to be blessed with this call. We'll assume they are unless we get some pings otherwise. But welcome to the show, Chris. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
We have lots of leaders on the line, and they're looking for some help on how to be better leaders. I love the title of your book, by the way. Real leaders don't do PowerPoint.
Thank you.
Let's start with a title. Spin us into what the thinking is behind that and what some of your philosophies are with regards to why you wrote the book and what the book is all about.
Well, I have two main kinds of clients. One is leaders, CEOs, executives, business owners, and self-employed entrepreneurs. Help them give speeches. And then I also work with high-tech professionals who usually use PowerPoint. And I saw a lot of PowerPoint creep that people... PowerPoint serves a function of helping communicate information. But when it creeps into other kinds of presentations, it really saps people's ability to get across their main points. And leaders primarily are not communicating information. They're trying to change the way people think and feel and act. And that's why I think they should not be using PowerPoint, which is really changing what people know as opposed to changing how they think and feel and act. So that's what I was trying to get at is, you know, you speak to inspire, to influence, but not primarily to inform if you're a leader.
That's funny you should bring that up, Chris, because nothing puts me to sleep faster than a warm conference room and a good PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, especially when they turn down the lights, dim the lights, kind of, it's nap time, folks.
That's it.
Are we seeing anything innovative in the form of, call it presentations, perhaps beyond PowerPoint? Anything innovative that's out there right now that's really capturing your attention on the presentation front?
Well, two things. One, in the PowerPoint front, there is a lot of energy going into design, using design a lot to clarify the presentation. So getting away from bullet points, they're really beautiful to look at. You know, and if you have $20,000-$30,000 and a great design person, you can probably come up with a great one. So in terms of PowerPoint, that's what's happening. I think in the other front, the thing that excites me is Barack Obama. That, you know, finally we've got a national leader who is showing people the power of presenting well, speaking well. And that's just exciting me. You know, he didn't come on the scene. I mean, he was on the scene, but I started writing the book 3 years ago. And as I've seen him rise, I go, oh, people are finally once again getting a taste of how a leader, just by the use of words, can shape the way people think and feel. That's exciting to me.
What was your take on his speech last night?
Last night, I thought it was pretty good. Again, one of the things I always judge a speech by is the effects it has. And supposedly, you know, people's confidence in the direction that he was taking the country was 63% before the speech and 80% afterwards. So I think it was as a good speech. To me, any speech that accomplishes your purpose is a good speech. He's good. He's thoughtful. He does something I think a leader needs to do, which is to come across as trustworthy, because especially in this day and age, as you well know, we're having a hard time trusting our leaders, and yet he's honest and has a sense of optimism. You know, to be trustworthy and tell the truth and depress people isn't what a leader's about, so I think he does both well.
Did you find it interesting that he dove into some uncharted waters when he started talking about sort of, you know, empowering the youth and having a responsibility, if you're an American, to not drop out of college and participate in the recovery efforts?
Wasn't it great that he finally put it on? I mean, this is the charge that could be laid against him, I suppose, is it's all going to be big government. But he has consistently had a message of putting it back on our shoulders. Mm-hmm. That's what I loved. I mean, he carried that theme in his inauguration address, which, mm-hmm. yeah, to me was not a top-flight one, but a good one, because if you notice in that speech, I don't know if you noticed, but he used the word I three times, my twice, and me not at all. But he used we, us, are like 60 times each. You know, he keeps saying it's you know, it's not Washington, it's not the government and Washington has a role, but we all have to chip in and do our part. And that I'm glad he keeps hitting that theme.
Have you caught the wave of some of the analysis going on with his speech and dissecting the number of times he used the word economy? I mean, there's some really neat stuff popping up today on the web. Have you caught any of that?
Oh, I haven't seen that. What struck you about that?
Well, basically, the net of it, I was listening to NPR just a little while ago, actually, before the show. I had to commute across Boston, and there was a report about how there is... you know, basically, there are a number of people that are trying to analyze every word he's saying, what it means, how it compares with other presidents and previous presidents, you know, new words and terms and phrases that are being used, overall, you know, momentum of his speech. Is it uplifting, downlifting, what action words? It's like a, you know, it's funny because you're speaking to people in the industry here that are in the search engine, you know, the SEO space, the search engine optimization space. That's a lot of our listeners on the line today. And,
right.
You know, we kind of geek out with keyword density and, you know, peppering rich keywords and content to appeal to the search engines. But there's a new kind of analysis going on with Obama and his speaking now, and that's really analyzing what words is he saying, how does that compare with other presidents. It's neat stuff, really cool stuff.
You know what I found really interesting were the waves of audience reaction, the McCain supporters versus the Obama supporters, and to see the waves of reaction throughout the course of his speech as people could twist their dial and say, you know, I like what he's saying, I'm excited, or I don't like what he's saying. That would be a really interesting tool to apply to sales pitches, you know, when you're practicing in-house, to have a tool like that where you could sit and say, okay, I'm with you, I'm excited, or, oh, God, you're putting me to sleep, you know?
Right. When I listen to these presentations or have other people listen, oftentimes I'll lead a team reacting. I never want people to suggest how to fix a speech. I just want them to tell me what did they follow, what did they like, and what and when did they get turned off. Mm-hmm. And to me, when people start trying to tinker with it and tell you, well, you should have said this, they kind of lose me because they're usually saying, this is what I would have said. But I love exactly what you're doing. Is people have a gut instinct of, oh, yeah, I was with you here, and I lost here. And, you know, people, the audience is infallible on this. If you lose them, it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as a speaker, and especially as a leader, you know, you just can't say people should have been listening. People should care about what I'm saying. It's your obligation to grab them and hold on to their interest and to maintain it as long as you're speaking,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the reasons why I think you should speak not too long. It's hard to do for a long time.
Have you seen any of the word cloud? And I'm just looking at, do you ever do word cloud analysis of you know, speeches that you're either helping a client write or you're, you know, purposely peppering stronger words, you know, in their speeches, and, you know, in getting into the details of how many times are you saying those words?
I don't think I've used that terminology. Can you explain that to me, and let's see if it corresponds to how I approach it?
Well, going back to the Obama incident, I'm just looking at the web. I just did a search on analysis of Obama speech, and there's on a website called readwriteweb.com, which is a pretty hot blog. It has a word cloud analysis of Obama's inaugural speech compared to Bush and Clinton and Reagan. So I'm not sure if you know what a word cloud is, or a keyword cloud, or some of these other cloud formations, but they sort of stack all the words together, and the bigger the word, the more times it was used, right?
Right.
So the biggest words are new and nation and America and generation and people, whereas the smallest words are lower back, America's good, face, you know, prosperous. So, you know, some words bigger, some words smaller, right? So the repetition of the words has it all. But isn't that important for speech analysis, in your opinion?
Yes. To me, it's to use words, but precisely to use the kind of words that are evocative, especially if they're image-based words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they evoke an image in people's minds. You know, there's all this stuff about having to appeal to people's auditory, visual, and kinesthetic sense. And oftentimes people take that very literally. So they say, well, you know, people are visual learners, so we have to show them something. Mm-hmm. But what they don't realize is that also applies to showing things to people in their imaginations. And words can do that. So, you know, things like the Iron Curtain, a chicken in every pot. There are words and phrases that are evocative of images that are much more powerful than anything else. And so it's not just the repetition. I'm absolutely a believer of repetition because, you know, people tune in and out of your speech all the time. So you've got to say it over and over and over again, and you've got to hit home with your main message. But also want the words that you use to be, you know, verbs and strong nouns, and especially if they can be image-based ones.
Could you step us through some of your tips and advice for how to prepare for a speech and how to create a great speech and what sort of guidance you might offer some of the listeners?
Absolutely. There are three basic questions I want people to ask when they start a presentation. Well, first of all, I'm assuming, and this is some assumption I'm making, I'm assuming they know what they're talking about, their general area, you know, if it's the web, if it's something concerned with their business, I'm assuming you know that. And I'm assuming you've done research about the audience and the event, so you know who you're speaking to, what, why they're gathering, when they're gathering, what they want, all that kind of stuff. So that's my presumption. Then I say you've got three questions you've got to answer. One, the first one is, when you finish talking, what do you want the audience to do with your presentation? So what do you want them to do? Not what do you want them to know, but what do you want them to do as a result of listening to you? That's number one. Number two, you have to figure out, why would they want to do that? That's the old, I'm sure you've heard it, the WIFM question, the what's in it for me question. Mm-hmm. How are they going to benefit from doing what you want them to do? So you can, as you know, as a boss or as a leader, you can be very clear about what you want people to do. You know, I want you to work harder, I want you to stay later, I want you to pull together, all of that stuff. That's what you want them to do, but the question is, why do they want to do it? How is that going to help them? And then the third question, now this gets into your content preparation, is what do they need to know and feel in order to do that? So you've determined what you want them to do, you know why they would want to do it, and then you've got to figure out what do they need to know and feel in order to do that. And once you've got those questions, you're ready to go with your outline.
Define what do they need to know and feel. I'm particularly interested in the feel. Could you expand upon feel a little bit more?
Sure. You know, I work with a lot of high-tech people. I mean, people, engineers, programmers, researchers, these are people that you would think to listen to them that they're all motivated entirely by their intellect and by their reason and that. And when I say, you know, you got to appeal to people's feelings and, you know, touch their emotions, they kind of, you know, run away scared thinking I'm trying to get touchy-feely on them. But, you know, even the most heady intellectual engineer still is motivated by feelings. I mean, they don't name them as feelings, but when they're involved in something, they are just so excited. They get obsessed about it. They get, you know, they work long hours. They don't even know what time it is. They're so involved in it. Or they're curious. Or they just have this automatic BS detector that goes when something doesn't strike them as right. Or they say, you know, I think you're onto something. Those are all kind of feelings, and if you can't tap into those, you're never going to move people. Because emotions are what move people. I mean, that's why there's motion in the word emotions. The thing that's actually going to convince them or move them from knowing something to doing something with it is that emotional connection.
Hey, Chris.
And what's your general thought on the length of a PowerPoint presentation?
The shorter, the better. You know, I like no speech over 20 minutes. That's one of the chapters in my book. It's called No Speech Over 20 Minutes. Sometimes you have to go longer than that. Then I say you divide it up into sections, and you make every 20-minute section kind of independent. So you'd speak for maybe 12, 13 minutes. You'd take Q&A, and then you'd start the next section. So each of those would kind of be a beginning, middle, and an end within it, some questions, and then you'd start again.
Hmm. Chris, there's a very funny episode of The Office in which they talk about how the core of any good speech involves banging your hands on the podium. And how important do you think voice inflection is? How important is the performance over the information?
You know, I'm divided. My belief is that the content is king. And the delivery is what I would consider the useful servant, useful or unuseful servant. I've seen a lot of bad ideas get out there because they were presented well, and I've seen a lot of good ideas sabotaged because they were presented poorly. So delivery is absolutely essential to it. The problem I have is that people oftentimes try to get people to present in ways that is very unnatural to them. That, you know, again, I'm working with engineers. Engineers are not going to come across like a sales rep might come across. They're not going to be cheerleaders. They're not going to be rah-rah, big, expansive, emotional people, you know, dancing around on stage. And you wouldn't want them to be. You want them to be as clear and as passionate as they can be. so, you know, not to sit on their energy, not to clam up anymore, just to be themselves a little bit bigger and a little bit louder. If one of the techniques that a lot of speech coaches know is that if I can get you to raise your volume as you're speaking, it will also raise your energy level. So, you know, there's a simple thing. When people are, you know, clamping down on their energy and getting boring and monotone, if you can get them to speak louder, they automatically inject a little more energy and vitality in their voices.
What about the pressure of opening with a laugh, opening with a smile on people's face? Why is it so important to do that, and do you believe in doing that?
I believe in starting or using humor throughout your presentation. I think the biggest mistake is trying to start with a joke because, you know, 95% of the time you're going to bomb, and you just don't want to start off on a wrong note. You know, it's interesting that when the big comedians, you know, on the Leno and Letterman, when they come out to begin their monologue, what you don't know is before they come out, there has been someone out there working the crowd, getting them laughing. So that by the time these guys, these professionals, comedians, step out to tell a joke, the audience has already been laughing and having a good time. You know, I'm not, or you're not, 99% of the speakers out there are not great comedians. We haven't had a warm-up crowd, you know, a group in front of us. To stand out there and start with a joke is just to invite a slow death. So if you can make a, you know, self-deprecating, funny comment, you know, something like that, that would be great. I prefer starting with a story myself, you know, a personal story that just gets people engaged and gets people, I'm hoping to get people, what you said, to smile. I don't try to get them to laugh because then I work too hard.
Guy Kawasaki has a wonderful summary that he often begins his speeches with that I've really carried with me, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. He starts talking about his presentation, and he has a lot of PowerPoints. He's a, you know, venture capitalist and sees PowerPoint after PowerPoint. And so he says, PowerPoints really need something super simple. You need to tell people 10 points, 10 and only points, 10 and only 10 points. And you need to number them in your presentation. That way, if your presentation sucks, at least the people seeing it will know you're coming to the end of the presentation. That's how he begins his presentation, which I think is so wonderful.
Yeah.
And so insightful to what you're about to see, number one, and number two, his experience and his ability to probably put together a pretty good PowerPoint presentation.
What I love is giving people roadmaps along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have 10 points, I have 3 points. And then to number them as you go along. So, if, you know, if I tell you I have 3 points, I'm going to say, you know, my first point is, and then I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And then I'm going, when I start the second point, I'm going to say, which brings me to my second point. People need those, you know, we're not sophisticated listeners. Mm-hmm. We're very sophisticated visual learners. We've lost the ability in the past 50, 100 years as audiences to be good auditory, you know, listeners. So you've got to give people sign points. You know, I'm going to talk for 20 minutes today. You know, the 3 points I have are these. You know, my first point is, you know, here's my second point. So to keep giving them those signposts along the way.
We like keeping our shows nice and tight and short, but here's a final question for me, and then Mandy may have another 12 to 17 questions for you. But entertainment, right?
Uh-huh.
I feel there is an obligation, you know, either when I'm speaking or when I'm listening to a speaker, for entertainment to be part of the program, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering why we aren't, why the screeners and the people that are putting together, you know, the candidates to speak at these events aren't really sort of screening and using YouTube and using video and using the opportunity to have people write speeches, write presentations in advance of the shows, and then let those become public property. Let those become, you know, what speech would you like to see live? You know,
That's a great idea.
Why?
I
think that's a great entrepreneurial idea that you should put that together.
in terms of entertainment, to my the two cardinal sins to me of a presentation are to bore your audience or to confuse them. Mm. Because either way, they're going to tune you out, and whatever you want them to do, they're not going to do. So absolutely, to keep people entertained, interested, engaged, and to understand what you're getting at.
But I would argue that even if you're entertained, you would probably overcome the confusion for somebody that really entertained throughout the presentation.
Well, that's the thing. If I like you and entertaining me and keeping me interested, if I like you, I'll struggle to make sense of what you're saying.
Yeah.
If I don't, you know, I stop.
Right.
Hey, Chris, what would you say for people who are more the shrinking violet type? You know, people who are wallflowers and don't have that edge of personality to get out there and sort of perform for a crowd. How do you break through?
Well, I ask them not to perform. I ask them to call on their strengths so that my belief is if you can talk to me across a table with a cup of coffee, you have what it takes to give a presentation. So I'm not going to let you off on you're an introvert and you don't like doing this. If you can do that, you know, if you can talk to me one-on-one, you can talk to 1,000 people. You just have to talk to people one at a time. So stop thinking of giving a speech. Think of it having a communication, a conversation with one person at a time. Look one person in the eye, speak to that person for, you know, 5, 7, 10 seconds, then look at another person, speak to that one person. While you're speaking to that one person, everyone else is going to feel involved. So stop freaking yourself out. You know, you really want to do this, as far as I'm concerned, and there's so much myth about what has to be happening in a presentation that I think people sabotage themselves.
Byron, if only everyone was as outgoing a speaker as you are, it might be a little bit easier.
Well, it's only because of great people like Chris that are out there that are evaluating people like me and coaching and training, and I definitely need some more tips from you, Chris, so I'm going to talk with you offline about that. You just can't.
Well, you know, that's why I wrote my book, is because my belief is that people have what it takes if they can lay aside some of the myths and misconceptions about speeches, mm-hmm. that they really can give a presentation that will have a powerful effect in people's lives.
I can't wait to be in the front row for Mandy's first speech and talking with 700 to 1,000 gurus from Life Tips and delivering a keynote address to all of our gurus.
I'll just give them one of my award-winning interpretive dances, Byron.
Entertainment's part of the package. Chris, any final words of wisdom? Any final wit for us with the last name, Chris
Witt? Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I hope your readers rush right on by my book, Real Leaders Don't Do PowerPoint. And I've got a blog that I always love. People are always reacting to what I say. You know, my belief is leaders have to take a strong stand and get the grief and the feedback that they call for. So I'm always looking for people's comments. My blog is lifeafterpowerpoint.com. www.lifeafterpowerpoint.com. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, Chris, we've enjoyed life with you on the, on the line today. Thanks for being a guest on the show.
Appreciate it.
Right on. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Amanda, you feel a little bit more knowledgeable now, and you're ready for you to craft Obama's next speech?
I do. I actually do. I feel a little more confident after all that.
Right on. Well, sometimes writers like you and editors and people are, you know, somewhat resistant to get out there on the stage and showcase your wares. But, you know, I'm confident. I'm going to be in the front row at a speaking event that you have this year.
Oh, good.
Let's make
You'll
it
be my
part
one and only.
Of your goal. We're going to be mapping out your plan for this year anyway in the next few weeks. So we'll add that to the list. Thanks for tuning into the show, everyone. Until next week, I hope your life's a little bit smarter,
better,
faster,
and more outspoken.
Yes, indeed, in front of a really big audience. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next week.